right. Well, I'm on the line with Steve Plaich, who's he has a variety of hats at the ACLU. What is it? The Mills Fan Club. What do we call that group, Steve? There you go. And are you still on the board of directors, or what's of the ACLU, or what's happening with that?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm board of the United Nations Association, and a few other things.
Uh-huh. And of course, you've spent your day working at the Association of Faith Communities.
Right. Yeah, that's been kind of my primary occupation right now. The Association of Faith Communities, as you know, has two shelters that they created. We host about 20 people in each shelter per night. And before the COVID-19 pandemic, we were rotating in a group of churches in Santa Cruz, Aptos area. But now we're sheltering in place.
24 hours.
Governor's order. My shelter is at United Methodist Church on California, and the other shelters are Resurrection Catholic Church out in Aptos.
Yeah, that's good. And we actually got a lot of that from Thomas, as you know, is one of your...
Thomas was a member of the Shelter A, and now he's residing in Shelter B. Great guy. We miss him, but hope he's thriving out there in Aptos.
Yeah, I guess what I've heard recently that there are some problems getting into the Association of Faith Communities run, and maybe I got the wrong group here, but the Safe Parking Program. Do you know much about that?
I do. That is a program of the Association of Faith Communities. It's separate, of course, from the Faith Community Shelters, which is what I work for.
How many are in that program? How many vehicles?
I was the past manager of that, and now I'm a coordinator.
How many actual people are, or how many vehicles are being housed or nightly given?
Well, what I can tell you is that there's 8 member churches, and I think that we still have a limit of 3 vehicles per church, although my understanding is they were trying to bump that up to 5. For instance, at United Methodist Church, which is one of the safe parking churches, I think we have 5 vehicles there.
Now, is this...
So I don't know how many people that would represent. I mean, on an average...
Well, what I'm wondering, sorry, Steve, let me interrupt you. What I'm wondering is whether the lots are, shall we say, full in the sense that the capacity that you are allowing people in has been reached, or are there a lot of vacancies?
You know, again, I don't really touch base with Father Joseph Jacobs, who is the program manager for that program, very often. My suspicion would be, just from looking around, if, for instance, the shrine, St. Joseph's there up on Westcliff, which I'm very close to right now. When I go by there, it doesn't appear that that lot is full of a permitted number of campers. And some of the other areas that we do, Peace United Church, for instance, I'm not certain that those are full. So my guess would be, Robert, is that we are not at capacity.
Now, what I guess I'm also wondering, because I spoke with Alicia Kuhl yesterday, she runs her own little program, so to speak, where you know she tries to be protective of people who are parked on the street next to her at an Olive Street extension off of Mission Street.
Sure, I was just up there yesterday and the day before.
Yeah, which is, as you know, under attack from Public Works as part of a restriping, don't let the big vehicles park there anymore campaign. She says that one of the problems with the program, I believe somebody else also mentioned this, is that that's the Association of Faith Communities program, is that the requirements to get into the program cannot often be met by people in vehicles. First of all, do you take people who are in ordinary cars or just RVs?
Well, for instance, at United Methodist, we have... one or two folks who are car dwellers, so living in their cars.
Right, that's good.
People living in cars, vans, RVs. We're not really restricted to the type of vehicle.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds good. However, you probably do require adequate registration.
Beyond my control in terms of what I would like to see in a program. As you know, one of the challenges of people living in recreational vehicles is compliance with registration and keeping all that up to date. Oftentimes the vehicles have some minor mechanical problem that makes it difficult for them to smog, so mm-hmm. you can't get in compliance. If you yep. can't smog it, you can't register it, as you know. So there's a ton of challenges, and I'd like to see some of those, you know, not only in our program, but also statewide, relaxed a bit to really kind of understand the realities of what vehicle dwelling is like and the challenges that are presented to people who are the only place they can live is in their cars, vans, or RVs.
And this is actually under the direction, the power of the Association of Faith Communities Board of Directors or leadership, whoever is running
sure.
this, right?
Yeah, no question. I wouldn't argue that. And as you know, Rabbi Phil Posner is a member of that board, so it'd be probably best directed to him to maybe bring it to the board and say, hey, is there any way that we could relax somewhat some of the qualifications for that? But that would be the way to do it.
Now, you and Phil, of course, were two of the founding members. I was another, and there were a bunch of other people, too, of the uh-huh. Conscience and Action group,
right.
or
yeah.
or Conscience in Action, as some used to call us, uh-huh. which has not been seen lately. Anything happening with that group?
You know, Phil's been writing, as you know, if you see some of the op-eds and commentaries that he's been writing. So I think because of the fact that this COVID-19 has made it difficult for us to kind of get together and plan, I'm not certain everybody is comfortable with, I'm just beginning to get comfortable with Zoom meetings and Google Meets types of meetings. But that's been kind of a disincentive to get together and actually, you know, make some plans and strategize. And as you know, when Conscience in Action was actually doing something, it was really a product of being able to meet at the Sub Rosa and kind of, you know, flesh out what strategies you wanted to pursue. And without that, it just makes it difficult.
Well, I would, you know, encourage you to, if you're still interested in that group, to know that the Sub Rosa is hosting regular meetings, has for the last 2 weeks of our group.
That I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Huff has been doing it. You got to talk to Haseen, who's handling it. And we would be happy to give up some of our time to Conscience in Action if they want to get something done, or at least I would.
Oh, sure. I'll talk to Phil, and that sounds like a terrific opportunity.
I mean, I know that before this, quite frankly, you and Phil were inactive in Conscience in Action for months before COVID hit. So I don't think, you know, I think using COVID as an excuse is not something that I, you know, place a lot of credibility in. But again, you're a man who's got many different things you're doing. I think you were not too happy with what we were doing in Huff, and you know, who is? It's like different people are or not doing in Huff. I'm not sure what which it is.
Yeah.
But the issue,
well, you know,
go ahead.
I mean, most of my efforts in terms of activism has been, as you know, I had the recent commentary published in the Sentinel about defunding the police and kind of laid out a plan that I thought could be workable in Santa Cruz to at least begin the conversation, in which I got some significant pushback from my fellow community, by fellow committee members. But nevertheless, I still think that it's a beginning point to really see if you can repurpose some of the police department funding into more, you know, socially equitable.
Can you summarize that, Steve, for us, the main points of your proposal?
Well, idea was that defunding is a really broad term, as you know. Some people go for repurposing, some divesting. Some folks, the Democratic Socialists of America, bless their hearts, have a group that's really for the abolition of police departments, and some people subscribe to that. My idea was to take 30% of the funding from the police department, which would amount to, their $30 million budget from the general fund of the city, so it's $10 million, and repurpose that into social justice kind of programs, either existing programs or ones they feel like Black Lives Matter, or, you know, whatever seems to be, working towards social or racial equity in Santa Cruz. And I thought that could be done easily by a 30% reduction in personnel from 100 sworn officers down to about 65 or 70. And you can do that through retirement and normal employment attrition. So I thought that was very workable to do. But it's just a beginning step. starting point. It's a discussion. And, you know, on the one end of the spectrum is let's abolish the Peace Department and use all that money, the whole $30 million, to repurpose for social justice and social welfare type programs. I'm not certain that that's a conversation that's either being had seriously at the policymaker levels, but it is an idea. And there's, on the other hand, where people say, no, let's have more police. You know, we want more funding for the police department. So the two ends of the spectrum where the conversation begins. But I just wanted to give it some particulars that people could say, well, I agree with that, I don't agree with it. It's a starting point, because as you know, for me, all this stuff is practical. It's not a theory, you know. And I said, well, let's defund the police department. And then you don't have any ideas about how to do it or why to do it. You just don't want the police to have money. But that really is not workable unless you can offer somebody, the people who are going to be policymakers or the citizenry who are ultimately maybe going to have to weigh in on this, some idea of what that would look like.
Have you had any conversations with Black Lives Matter folks, student groups, NAACP, people who have showed up on the streets and are not simply engaged in pretentious bending a knee gestures, but are actually out there doing things like removing fences that the police have put up to drive away homeless people and to wall off Food Not Bombs, as you may remember happened at the town clock and in front of the post office. But in other words, have you had any, with activist groups who are causing actions to at least forcing departments to respond?
To the extent that I participate in an event or a march or a gathering or stay in contact with the DSA defunding group or Abby, who's part of that, or Chris Crone, who is seeming to be involved in at least the discussion about defunding. Yeah, to that extent, sure. You know, and I'm more than happy to always discuss that. You know, we talked about it at the SLU meetings. The NAACP, I think, you know, has the local chapters had some discussions about it. So, you know.
Do you see any protests coming up, Steve? Do you see any protests coming up, Steve, or any focal points that you would suggest people who are, you know, who believe it, that the idea of putting bodies in front of the relevant authorities and raising your voices in ways that cannot simply be ignored by saying, well, you're 1 minute up, move on?
Yeah, true, but the problem is that those voices, for one reason or another, continue to be ignored. I mean, I'm not encouraged by the recent wave of gatherings and, you know, good faith gestures by people. You know, you see signs in windows say Black Lives Matter. Well, now it does to people, but how come it hasn't? You know, for as you and I have been working for, you know, racial justice and equality maybe for many, many years, and have been involved with people who are really wanting, you know, Black Lives Matter movements and those kinds of things, racial equity, to really make strides in Santa Cruz. It reminds me oftentimes of what happens when there's some horrific gun-related tragedy, and you have all of this movement toward, oh, we're going to have gun legislation, we're going to change the laws, and you get kids standing up and saying, we will not.
Well, you know, I'm interrupting you, Steve. I agree with you for sure that that's often the result, that, you know, we get the gestures without the substance, or even some actions, but then that are not, didn't have any follow-up. But the issue to me is, seems to be different nationally, because there is so much repeated concern and increased transparency, not transparency because of the police department, but transparency because people are forcing things into public view, but through video and so forth.
Pointed out, and as Keith pointed out when I sent out, for instance, this recent article about the Oakland Police Department going away from chokeholds, that's like the lowest possible hanging fruit. I'm shocked that police departments even consider using chokeholds anymore, but that's what they point to say, see, we're making strides, and so this is progress.
Right, well, let's not talk about where people are not making strides. Let's talk about what strides, what specific things in Santa Cruz. If there were 1,000 people who were listening very seriously to what you were saying, and you wanted to draw their attention to a particular issue and to a particular series of individuals who need to be made aware of that issue, what would that issue be, and who would that person or group of people be in terms of the authorities that need to be confronted?
Probably need to be, you know, really addressed to the policymakers and chain of command at the police department. I don't think that our city manager, I don't think that our current city council is going to go anywhere near any kind of repurposing or defunding of money voluntarily. They're certainly not going to do it. I think those 1,000 people, if they existed, if you could gather them somewhere, would be best going right to the source, right to the police department, right to our, headquarters, and be very loud and vocal about what they wanted from their police department. You know, that would be what I would recommend doing, and at least then that is heard by the people who are most directly affected. But, you know, to go to city council, of course you can't go, but when we will be able to go back, you know, to go and have your minute and a half to say, we have to defund the police department, we need to repurpose funds, you know, to a city council, it is entirely unlikely to make any of those changes, and that's we're going into an election cycle where council's not going to change, to the point where they're going to make any substantive decisions about that. So city manager probably is not interested in really.
Well, you know, I agree with you completely, obviously, but who would you go to in order to, should we say, activate people around this issue who are interested? I mean, there have been many, many people who've showed up briefly, at least.
The clergy is very important. Rev Deb, for instance, is very important. Look at all the great work that she did in gay marriage and civil rights and that kind of thing.
And I'm sorry, who are we talking about now?
The Reverend Deborah Johnson from Inner Light Church out there in San Sotel and Aptos. Mm-hmm. She was fantastic in galvanizing, people around that issue. I think if she really engaged in this particular issue, she'd be a terrific leader. And this is the kind of thing where...
Have you spoken to her about this?
Old-style activism, Robert, kind of that we did there, brought up in, where there you have kind of leadership types rather than the kind of consensus-based, occupy-type decision-making process. But you have to have people who are willing to stand up and organize and gather people.
Have you spoken to this woman or to anyone else?
I haven't spoken to the Reverend Deborah Johnson because I haven't really pushed this beyond putting out my ideas about how it could be done. And what we should be talking about.
Well, strike while the iron is hot, Steve. Strike while the iron is hot.
I understand that. I understand. You know, within the confines of, the bandwidth that I have and the time that I have to be able to do stuff, certainly, that's on my list. But, it has to happen when it happens for me.
What do you make of the concern of the CDC around COVID-19's the need not to have group shelters or to make sure that people have individual motel rooms, such as was urged by the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless and by, the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness and numerous medical experts up there. Although we've noticed recently that there isn't a lot of unusual COVID occurrence in the homeless population either here or elsewhere.
Yeah. No, in fact, there was just an article in the Chronicle today.
Right. Saw that.
Series, you've probably seen it.
Indeed.
It says that the incidence of COVID-19 is extremely low in the homeless community. I've always said, since March, that homeless people in Santa Cruz are safer outside than they are inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that bears out the fact that we've had very little virus transmission in the homeless community here in Santa Cruz. So,
Any reports? You probably have been spending more time indoors than outdoors, although...
No, shelter in place is not the way that I can live and do what I need to do, so I'm out all the time.
And you're not coughing a lot and getting a high fever yet?
No, in fact, I will say that because of the kind of the protocols that we followed in our shelters and the things we've done, we haven't had so much as an elevated temperature in any of our people.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed, I've heard that we've seen different areas cleared away, ranging from the post office to the area next to the post office with Cooper and Russell, to people essentially being pushed into smaller and smaller areas in the in the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands area, to the clearing of Coral Street, and then more recently to the clearing of the Caltrain tracks. Have you seen anything of that happening recently that you want to comment on?
Well, I would say, interestingly, that as I'm kind of roaming around and seeing who is where, there is a large number of people camping along Highway 1 between the Ocean Street extension and the River Street extension. I would say that it's equal in number to the number of tents that are in San Lorenzo Park, which really is not being reduced. They may be reducing the footprint, but I go by there every day. In fact, we our shelter, because we have more food than we can really use, delivers food down there just about every day. Whatever we have, that's, you know, the dinners that we have, just the various things that we have, we think would be useful. There are many more, and they're letting people, for instance, our friend Joey, is now camping on the bridge overpass on Water Street. They had that for a while fenced off, as you probably have seen.
I know, until the protesters tore down the fence. I noticed that, and that of course, that fence was removed by a direct action protest movement
the point that I'm, you're asking me what I've seen in the way of generation of...
Right, and you're telling me, and I'm glad you are. Are any kind of facilities being put in there, such as porta-potties, wash stations?
Well, there's a ton of porta-potties over in San Lorenzo Park. That ravine there along Highway 1, there isn't anything that I know of. Probably the closest porta-potties is the ones over on Coral Street that are right next to where there's small 17 number 10 encampment is next to the house that they're going to eventually make into transitional housing. That's the nearest that I can think of right offhand.
Are those who are in, you might know this, I don't know if you do or don't, those who are in either the Veterans Hall or the Laurel Street or the Armory, if they request to be put into a motel room because they're over the age of 65, they're vulnerable, they may not be sick, but they may be worried about getting it because it's asymptomatic and there's no vaccine, no cure, yada, yada, yada. Do they have that option as far as you know?
As far as I know, one of the fellows who is the monitor for our rotating shelter has been in a motel room for the last 2 or 3 months, and he is, what motel is he in? He did mention that there are several people that are also there as a part of the program. If you're over 65, you can apply, and my understanding is you can get in. The problem has always been that those rooms, we had 155 motel rooms in Santa Cruz, and those motel rooms were prioritized by the county health department for people who were symptomatic, who were certifiably at risk, as most homeless people are, so it's kind of silly. Their problem was prioritizing in some articulated way so that they could really get people in through a process. And that's been the problem. But as far as I know, and I do know several people who are over 65, Thomas is one who, were he interested in being able to get a motel room because he is now at that age, he could apply and get in. We could get him in.
But do you have any figures about people? I mean, I know that a few people. I know your old manager got in, who was and deserved a rest after all his work at the association.
Oh, yeah.
But, I understand that generally, I hear from others, Keith McHenry, Alicia Cool, or another source, that that's not the case for people that they know that are trying to get in. Also, to skip to another subject, potable water, drinking water at the Benchlands. Have you heard that that's been provided or is still not available?
I haven't heard. Hey, wait, here. Guess who's going by?
Tell me. It sounds musical, whoever it is. Who?
Curtis Relford.
Curtis Relford, yes. Well, he's got a big vehicle.
I don't know. I'll probably ask key people tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. I think Curtis is interfering with your phone reception there, Steve.
Oh, yeah. I have a
Hello? And it looks like we've lost Steve. But we had him for a while. It's hard to get a word in edgewise with Steve, but when you do, he's got a lot to say. Or at least a lot of words. And he's calling back. I will denounce him face to face. Hi there.
You're back.
Ah, so glad you're calling back. I was just denouncing you behind your back, so that's good.
No, I'd have to ask the people who are going and delivering the food for us whether or not any potable water has been provided or is being provided. I don't know for a fact.
Indeed. I heard you, actually, and I'm glad you are. And I'd also, if you have any idea of who, you were saying that you've gotten some pushback from your proposals of a 30% reduction in personnel and funding. Who is disinclined to do that, and who is more enthusiastic about that, if that you wish to say?
Could you repeat that? You kind of broke up again.
Your 30% proposal of reductions.
I just got some pushback from my fellow committee members, even though I had mentioned in the article that I wasn't speaking on behalf of the committee. I was simply speaking as somebody who had some experience with police practices and procedures by virtue of the fact that I had served and was serving on that committee. So a couple of folks were not happy with it.
Oh, because they were afraid of it being tarred, so to speak.
And folks like Beverly Brook, who was very supportive. So,
So she.
The committee has its police department leaders, and they have their people who are a little more circumspect about the police department is doing or should be doing.
So when a protest is set up outside the police department in an encampment that demands they will be there until a 30% reduction happens, you will be there leading the charge.
Well, I'd certainly be there representing my views, that's for sure, since it's my idea.
Uh-huh. Well, naturally, you copyrighted it, and why shouldn't it be, by goodness. I'd love to hear if you are actually ever organizing such a thing, and I'm sure that your fellow members on the various committees you are on might not take as happy a view, but I think it would, if you believe in your proposal truly, then you have to take the actions that will effectuate it, rather than simply using it as a platform. So, that's a problem and an important thing. You know that. So call me and I'll try to hobble on down, even with my vulnerability to these stupid COVID things. So.
All righty. Well, I'm going to have to run and get on to my next gig. So good talking to you.
Yeah, I want to talk to you next time, Steve, if we can, about some of the questions I laid at Chief Mills' doorstep, which he has declined to answer, to get your thoughts on them.
All right. I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
All right. And that was Steve Plaich, a man with many hats, as I mentioned before. I'm not sure where he was, but wherever he was, you heard him.